My name's Elijah, and welcome to the Roots Hospitality Podcast.
Yes, chef!
Welcome to episode 58 with Martina Blunt.
So you had a customer that had his first old-fashioned.
Yeah.
I think this is funny, because like, I remember the first Negroni I ever had.
Yes?
Like, I think, yeah, it was like ages ago. It was like, I think it was back when I was at this cafe that I was at in Shell Harbour, and I was an apprentice there. And I don't know, like the front of house would just sling your drinks and stuff. And I remember having it. And it's like the first beer you also ever have, and it tastes like shit. For me, a Negroni at first, for me, I just learned to acquire that taste. Did you enjoy beer the first time you had a beer?
Actually, yes.
Oh, really?
Yes, I was a little girl. I always wanted to try a little bit, and my father gave me like the sip of the foam.
Really?
And I was telling, this one is better than the other one. And I had my opinion about the beers, and I really like it. But I don't remember my first cocktail. I don't remember my first Negroni. It was like I started to work as a bartender before I had ever, I think, a proper drink.
Yeah.
Probably. Oh, it was like a pub, but also we served some cocktails, you know, it was like 10 years ago. Mm. And in Poland, and especially in Katowice, the situation with bar industry wasn't developed right now, like right now. And we served the cocktails like was basically vodka, syrup, juice, and this is it, I think. lemon juice, and no bitters. But yeah, I remember old fashioned was a thing, but we used the sugar cubes, the napkin, the Angostura bitters, and then this very old fashioned way to do this. Right now we use rich syrup, and this is faster, this is better. You can make exactly the same drink every time. And then, so I remember someone ordered like 10 old fashioned.
Yeah.
And the only way I know it was with the sugar cube. And I needed to stir it so long to dissolve this sugar, but it's impossible. It always, some sugar parts will stay in the drink, and some people like it to feel it.
Yes.
And I needed to make 10, and was, my God, so busy right now. And now, if someone ordered 10 old fashioned, sure, what's the problem? But back then it was challenging.
Yeah, there's a bar back home called Old Mate's Place, and it's a hidden bar as well. You actually have to find this inconspicuous building and go up about 4 flights of stairs just to find this white door. And there's a security guard on there. It doesn't even say the name of the place. And the owner there, Dre, tells this story about one time it was him, one of the bartender, and they decided to send the third guy on for a break because it was a busy lunch. And it was just going to be Dre and this other guy, Michael. And it was kind of quiet. It got to about 4 o'clock and about 20 people come in, like a couple of minutes after this other guy was on break. And they come in, they're like obviously deciding to finish work early, and they're coming down, you know, ordering drinks and all this sort of stuff. And so some people are ordering this and that cocktail. And then after they've been ordered, another guy comes up and orders like 20 Negronis at once. And he's like, this is crazy. He's like, how am I going to make 20 Negronis in a good time so I can make these other cocktails? And he looks at this guy, he looks around, he sees a bucket. And he's like, can I just make your Negroni in this bucket? Like, it's not even a bar bucket. It was just like something you'd put a bottle of wine in with ice.
Yes,
and
yes.
He's just cooler. Like, yeah. And he was just like, you're right, if I just use this to make your Negroni, he's like, go for it. So he just chugged all this like shit in there, and he just like mixed it around, and he was just like, oh, that'll do. And he just pours it in. It was so funny, like.
Yeah, but
imagine if he had to dissolve
to
ice cubes.
Strain it. Right now, when I imagine this situation, how he strained it, the first question, and the other, why he didn't build all the cocktails because Negroni could be easily built. Yeah, so pour all the portions of.
Oh. I don't know. It was crazy. It was funny. But I can imagine that. And when you talk about Negroni and how difficult it would be, I can sense that.
Yeah.
But
the same with my old fashioned. You see.
Yeah.
It could be easier than.
Yeah.
But if you are stressed and under the pressure, sometimes you make different strange decisions.
Yeah. Because you said that, it makes me feel as though you thought of a time that happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Has that happened to you? What was that time?
I think that's a situation that happened to me a lot of times during my career, I would say.
Yeah.
Because in Polish, we have some special words for the situation when there is a lot of guests, it's very busy, and we call it tabaka. It doesn't even mean anything. Only people from hospitality know this word.
Sure.
Yeah, and tabaka is, sometimes we say tabaka is not the situation that happened around you, it's in your head. Yes, so you need to stay calm, no matter how much guests stand at the bar yelling at you and waiting for the orders, and you have like no glass, no prep, no anything, no ice, and you need to serve, and it's impossible.
Yeah.
But you need to stay calm, because if you will get this tabaka state of mind, this is disaster.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
So, tabaka?
Tabaka.
Okay, this is good to know. So give me an example of if I was a chef in a situation where I would say this to someone. Is it if they're stressing out and then I would say tabaka as a way to just remind them to relax and just think?
Tabaka is expression to call the situation when there is a lot of guests and you have so much work that you don't even know where to start.
Sure.
Something like that.
Yeah, sure.
And you don't have time to go
so it's
for
like
a break.
Tobacco.
No break, yeah. No coffee, nor a sip of from the glass of water, anything like that. Just working, very busy. I think in a kitchen, it's exactly the same situation very often.
Yeah. We would call it being in the shit.
Oh. Yeah. Being in the shit.
That would be being in the shit, where it's like you got so much to do and you're like, where do I start? Like, what the fuck? Like, that would be that translation of it. Like, and then trying to manage your time through that, which I think is hilarious. So that's where the fun starts, I feel. For you becoming a bartender, and I think about this when I wanted to become a chef. For myself, I was at university. Had no intentions of being a chef. I was a dishy, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, I was scrubbing pots and pans and at a cafe while I was at university. And I had two jobs, and I was at a place called Red Rooster, which, do you know KFC here?
Yeah, so
Red Rooster is Australia's.
Okay.
Yeah, we have KFC in Australia, but Red Rooster is, like, it started in Australia. And so it's kind of that.
More popular?
Not really. I wouldn't say it's popular. But, so I worked at a place called Red Rooster and a cafe where I was scrubbing pots and stuff. And the only reason I think I really enjoyed the idea of being a chef was because of the head chef that was there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a small cafe. There would be two chefs and then me being the dishy. And watching him work and use the space and make it flow so well and have fun at the same time, I think was really exciting and really made me want to do that. So do you feel as though you had a similar experience, or was it different for you?
I think that being a chef is something that you can dream about when you are a child. And being a bartender is not exactly the same situation.
Unless you're having a sip of beer when you're 12 years old, you know?
Actually, you're right. for me, it was the same beginning that I was studying interior design. Another time I worked on weekends just to make some money. And I never planned to become a professional bartender. And there was a time when I didn't want to learn anything special from this subject area, because I was thinking, that's not a serious job. That's not really what I'm going to do.
Mm.
Why should I waste my, you know, anything for this?
Yeah.
But, you know, life can be surprising, and I found this job very satisfying, and it gives the daily joy, I would say. And the you have instant feedback, what's very important for me. And I had the other option to become the architecture and work in normal hours at a computer in an office. And I realized that this does not give me the satisfaction, not as the bartending. And of course, the money was also the other reason. But there was a long time when I didn't realize it's gonna be my real job. So I think I lost some time of developing in this. But when I because you know, it's also, I don't know how you see this, because being a chef is, yeah, people consider this job as a, I don't know, prestige, would say.
Like a sommelier.
Yeah.
Or something.
And bartender, not exactly, especially 10 years ago. And I would say to my parents that I'm gonna, because you are so talented, you can, you know, always the best results at school and etc. And you study and everything. And then you tell them, I'm gonna be a bartender for life. And yeah, it took some time to get used to that. And now I feel completely perfect with this yeah. with this fact. But it took some time. That's right. But the moment when I realized that this job is for me, it's hard to say, because it wasn't one moment. It was the process. It was a longer process, for sure.
Was it all those nights drinking after your architecture degree at a bar? And you're like, oh, this looks pretty good right now.
Yes. there was also a time when I was thinking, maybe I will match these two skills and I will make the projects of bars. Because if you have a knowledge in some area, then you can better make interior designs, because you know what's needed there. Yeah. Like, I couldn't design proper hospital because I have no idea what they need there. But the bar, of course,
yeah,
because of my experience. So there is always an option.
Yeah.
And I also use my skills, for example, here at this bar, because when we create a new menu, I, for example, design our illustration pictures for the menu.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, because, you know, you always use your skills wherever you are.
So all the drawings in the menu, you drew them?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Actually, that's the first menu that I made, and the next one's gonna be even more challenging because it's gonna be in colors.
Wow. But,
you know, it's something...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that. I really think that's where a venue works really well, is when it can make use of someone's skills outside of the bar. Because I feel like that really brings an importance to that person for your venue. And
yeah.
You can have 5 bartenders all work and all know how to make the same cocktail, but if one's really good at marketing, or if one's really good at art, or one's really good at welcoming people, and so they're at the bar as they welcome some people and they make their drinks, or, you know, there might be someone else who's funny and is the jokester. Like, everyone has these external skills, whatever it may be. And I think it works really well when an owner or the bar manager can see that and goes, hey man, like, I didn't realize you were so good at this. Why don't you bring it here? Like, may as well. Like, and that makes them enjoy their job more too, you know?
And I've noticed that. And it helps you to develop your other skills, and you feel that, for example, I really appreciate our boss. There is only 5 of us here, and he can find our needs and our talents and use it, and he really know how to help people to develop, and this place is great for this.
And I think that's really cool. So I think that's awesome. That's very artistic. That's awesome. Like, that's so cool.
Some things are so challenging that for me they are very stressful. And for example, public performance is very stressful for me. And also, this is situation with cocktail competition and the other thing. And my boss, I think, he pushed me to do this. For example, our talking today. And the other thing, like, I also performed in some educational bartending program. And I think he sees my potential here, and I don't. But he tried to, you know, push me to doing that.
Yeah.
And but in a gentle way.
Yeah.
So yeah, he know how to do this and how to help people to develop their skills.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of chefs that try and go to do different competitions. Like the last guest that I had on, Kimberly Tang from Melbourne, mm-hmm. She does a few cooking competitions. And like, you know, she's an excellent chef. And at first she talks about not doing very well at these competitions, but it's not about competing with other people. It's about using that to make yourself better at what you do. And I think that mm-hmm. was the important difference, is that it's not about how you form in relation to another bartender or another chef. It's just about how well you've done compared to the year before or the last time that you tried, you know? And I, that's what it's all about. It's not about winning the award. It's about learning something new, you know? And once I think you realize that, you can forget that.
Yeah, that's all in your head.
Yeah. You can forget all this, oh, I wasn't as good as this person bullshit. Like, none of that. You can go, okay, well, you know, I'm really proud of myself because I did this better, or my plating was better, or my time management, or my creativity was smarter. Do you know what I mean?
Of course, I know what you mean, and I think that's beautiful if someone can think about it this way.
Mm.
But I think it's not so easy, and for some people there is, and for some it's very difficult, and they always try to compare, and they're scared of public performance, etc.
Yeah.
So yeah, but to be a good competition bartender is not exactly the same that be a good bartender.
Sure.
And of course, not everyone is meant to do this. You can feel completely, you can feel satisfied with your job without any success in competitions.
Yeah, that's
but
important.
There was a time when I considered that even if I don't want to do this, I need to get some competition success to show to my family that what I'm doing is serious and I've got some success, because it's hard to explain to them that this is really a job and a thing. So there was a time when I was thinking about
this
way, but not anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, I've never done a cooking competition, and it's funny, like my dad told me when I started that being a chef was a bad idea.
Yeah.
So I was once again, like, I was at university doing my mm-hmm. double degree, and then I was like, I want to be a chef. And he's like, it's a terrible idea. He's like, I don't support that. Yeah.
Serious?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't care. I'm doing it anyway. Like, it might make me happy, you know? So like, why not go for that? So it's the same situation. But then it only after a few years when I think he started to realize, and it's funny you say this, because it was only when he would start to see me pop up in different things online that he would go, oh, it's an actual thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I can understand where you're coming from with that, you know? But like, you might see your face on some sort of a poster or media or a name somewhere, and you're just like, oh, wow, my mm-hmm. son's really doing something with his life. And it's really strange, because it shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that person needs to see these kind of accreditations or awards or names everywhere to feel like it's a job. Because it's not. Like,
you
it's
know,
fun.
Yeah, but one day you realize that life is not about this.
Yeah.
Life is about your, as I said, daily joy. That this job is not giving you some vision of success or anything like that, but you are happy every day because you are doing that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make you feel sad or anything like that. Especially here, because the service with closed door is just so good that you have everything under control and you can serve your guest as good as you can.
Yeah.
Because there is no more guest inside that you can serve.
Yeah.
Because sometimes there is very, very difficult to do this when you have a lot of guests. They are standing around the bar, etc. It's very easy to forget about someone.
Yeah.
Here, we never forget. Of course, we do everything to never forget about anyone and take care of their needs. And that's very satisfying when the guests are satisfied with your service. And it gives instant feedback, which is usually positive. So
usually, yeah.
But of course, there are some for jobs where you don't need to deal with so much opinions. For example, on the internet, because this could be, I find it quite challenging to read some negative opinions. But I think this is very popular from a lot for different jobs, not only hospitality. But I never wanted to read any opinions, even if they all were positive, and I had never negative opinion on the internet about my service, but I was always scared that they would want to. I don't want to read them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it'd be like an actor reading a bad review of their film or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm it's funny, like I'm undecided about this age of reviews when it comes to restaurants and stuff, you know? Yeah. Like I'm really undecided about whether you need to really listen or care if what you're doing, especially if what you're doing is the way you want it to be done, like a stage performance, right? Like you spend so long coming up with the script, the characters, the story, and it's all put together in the way that you've envisioned. And then someone comes and watch that play and says, I don't like it because there wasn't this or there wasn't that, or, you know, and then do you then change your play or theatre because of that? Well, you go, no, but you can't satisfy everybody.
Yeah.
And this is the how I feel when it comes to a bar, is that how you want to, especially when it comes to the atmosphere you would like to bring to somebody, you spend so much time coming up with the colors and the vibe and the music and the lighting tones and to give someone an atmosphere, but because one person didn't like it for one reason, does that therefore mean that you have to then change something for them? It's, I don't know, it's hard because it's right. Also, it is also a business at the end of the day. Yeah. So of course you would like them to come back. So you, of course you have to consider that. And it's only when the comments are consistent, maybe that's where it's different. But when you get the occasional one off, you're like, oh, whatever, like, I won't take it seriously. Like, yeah. I won't, like, unless everyone's saying the same thing, then that therefore means my business will be affected. But the occasional one, it's like, oh, whatever, like.
Yeah, I think it depends on the venue, because here it's very rare situation if someone came here accidentally, I would say, that they don't know what place it is.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have a guest who don't know that this is the cocktail bar, and they are really confused. And a lot of guests are confused with the fact that the door are closed and they feel like, what's happening? And you need to explain why this is like that.
Yeah.
And some people don't like it, but I think most of people do. And yeah, but there is sometimes a situation if someone seriously don't like the vibe, and but these are people who didn't come to a cocktail bar. These are people who was invited by someone to for a beer after work, and then they're, what's going on? Why the beer is so expensive? And this is because we don't want people to order that. But we have one, of course.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that you don't like your water, because there was one review about the water that we serve. This is cucumber water. And he said that it tastes like the flour was kept in this.
What?
And it is so expensive.
Yeah.
Etc. And the door are closed. And this was what was bad. The cucumber water, expensive beer, and closed door. Well, all right. I see.
Oh God, that's so funny. Yeah, it's. I think it's really, really funny. Like working in a business where, or working in hospitality where, over those years you learn to deal with these people, and sometimes you can get some really funny people that would just say something or complain about something, and you're like, oh my God, like I've not heard this complaint before, and it could just be something so silly, like so silly, like even requests, even customer requests. Of them asking if you can do something for them that's like outside of your menu, for example, like that are just really strange. I think it's really funny. Like at the restaurant I was at, for example, there was a cauliflower dish on the menu, and they asked if they could have the cauliflower cooked well done, which I thought was a really strange thing.
Okay.
You don't, like, that's what you ask for a steak, not for a piece of fucking, you know, not a vegetable. Like, it's going to be cooked. like how, like, do you know what I mean? Like, do you want mashed cauliflower? Like, fuck, like, what do you want from me? Like, it was just so strange. Like, I thought that was really, really funny.
I love this situation. Actually, that's one of my favorite thing in that job, that this situation that makes you laugh. Because, for example, someone come to a bar and he says to me, please give me three small beers. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I have only big one in a bottles. Okay, then give me four. And you're like, what just happened?
What doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Or for example, excuse me, how big is this 30 centimeters pizza?
Really?
Yeah. I love it.
How big is it? What do you want me to say? Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. So for you starting as a bartender 10 years ago, how different was your experience in that bar compared to where you would like to be? Because right now you're in a cocktail bar. I don't know if you have an idea of the kind of cocktail bar you would like to be in another 5 years or 10 years, whether it is this place or whether it's another place. But compared to when you started, how did that change? And how do you think that... Actually, just from where you started, how do you feel as though that's changed your journey and your career to get here?
From there to this, it was like the whole universe of experience and different places. And I, at the beginning, I didn't know what I want to do. I have no idea how good it can be.
Yeah.
But even though it was so satisfying that I wanted to stay. Even the long hours wasn't that problematic for me. Mm-hmm. And this job is really demanding, but it gives you something in, you know, return you this energy that you put inside.
Yeah.
And hard to say, I never thought that being a cocktail bartender and know a lot of classic cocktails, it wasn't my idea. At the beginning, it just developed during the time because there was a part of this job and of this whole area that I discovered one by one, that you can know a lot of whiskey, for example, and know your product very well, and you can develop in the other direction, like the classic cocktails, mixing drinks, making, creating the cocktails. Like, not only know the classic one, but create your own. Yeah. For a long time, that was for me, like, very difficult, very demanding. I was thinking that it's impossible for me to create a cocktail.
Yeah.
But then I put myself to a situation. I worked in a bar where we have our craft cocktail menu to every 2 months, the new menu. And yeah. We needed to create cocktails. It was like, you have to. And then you realize that you can.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was a head bartender in a bar when this was all on me to create the cocktail menu. And this is when you realize that you can do this.
Yeah.
But there was a long time when I was thinking it's impossible.
Yeah.
And I can't. So there was different times for me. One time I wanted to develop in the one direction, like for example food pairing. Mm-hmm. I work in two different venues that was focused on that.
Oh yeah, what venues?
One was in Gdańsk, it was Elixir, so it was a, I would say, fine dining restaurant that have a tasting menu. Mm-hmm. With food pairing, so the cocktails was paired with dishes. Mm-hmm. And we also serve like cocktail tasting menu. So we serve small cocktails one by one. We had like the tickets with away. Mm. We needed to, different service than in a normal bar. Like someone order and you make it. Yeah. And here you have like the long check and you need to find the perfect moment to serve one by one after the another and etc.
Yeah.
And the other was the vodka bar with food pairing vodka with food.
Sure.
Yeah, and then there also was a cocktail, but mostly it was a vodka bar.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Here you have food pairing. Now, then you feel like you want to get all the knowledge about some specific spirits, sure. and then this is your area, and then you feel, no, I want to know all the classic cocktails, and it's so much things that you can learn, and the more you know, the more you realize how little you know, and there is always something to explore.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. And there is no moment when you think, okay, now I'm good. Now can I get credits? Give me more money. I always feel like, no, no, I want to learn. Because in my previous job, I was a head bartender, and I get this little experience of being in charge, but I have no free time. It was so stressful. So, and I felt like everyone think that I know everything in my job, in this little universe. And I was like, no, I don't want to go this way. I don't want to be a head bartender, bar manager, and go this path. I want to go back at the bar and do cocktails and develop my skills in this way. Because some people are maybe meant to be in charge, or they like it. Like being a chef is something different than just cooking. I mean the head chef, yes. Because you need to manage, you need to get your orders, you need to create menu, and these are absolutely different skills than this, like only the daily service, cooking, etc. And you can go home and forget about it and have your free time, have your life. And if you're a chef, then not exactly.
Yeah.
This is a lot of things that you need to do
different
outside your working hours, for example, especially. This is my experience from being a head bartender.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that at the kitchen it's very similar situation.
Yeah.
Someone calling you, we are out of something. Or, you know, people calling you all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I completely understand where you're coming from. Like, I completely understand, like, going from just being the chef who cooks and preps to being in a role where you have to manage a team. It's like you do less of the creative stuff, more of the stuff that just needs to happen and make sure everyone's happy. And then you're kind of like, ah, you miss just having the time where you just dealt with the food and you can just make the dish or come experiment and stuff, because it's like, yeah, it's just like I miss that myself. And that, and I think for the both of us, you know, we're doing a dream or a passion that was creative, where a job where you had to think outside the box, you know, where to come up with an end result of something. So, like, I was doing a psychology criminology degree. That's what I was doing. So, but that means for a job like that, you have to think outside the box. Not everything is the same. So whether your criminology being the study of, like, crime, for example, everything's always going to be different, and you have to use your head in a different way to understand every situation and try and make sense of it. And I think, like, architecture is the same thing, where you have a specific, you kind of have a different space, and you have to use that space to make it as beautiful or as just as beautiful as possible, sort of thing. And you have to get really creative. You can't, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm just assuming for architecture. It's not just building the same block of houses in
Yes and
it
no.
It can be. Yeah, it
yes
can be.
Yes and no.
But I assume that wouldn't be what you would do.
When you start being interior designer, I was talking with my colleagues yesterday about that, and I told them, being interior designer at the very beginning of your career is like making poster martini every day.
Oh, sure.
You know? It's not like you exactly like, it's what people like.
Yeah.
And you need to do this. Of course, in our job, we do the same thing, but we have more opportunities to give a little more of...
I get you. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, of course, that's part of every job. A chef has to make the same bloody beef brisket burger at a cafe until that they are in a position in a different venue, being, you know, where they can allow to be creative and actually really flourish, you know, really flower.
So I guess that's maybe what I'm trying to say is that, of course, you'll do that at the start. You'll make the same house, just copy and paste it. But I think in the long run, that wouldn't satisfy you. You would want to be able to do something beautiful and do something unique, like in the long run. What I'm curious to know or to understand is the hospitality specifically to Poland. It's hard to find an individual sense of hospitality in Australia because it's so multicultural. Mm-hmm. So because there are so many different people that bring their own heritage, you can see that in their bar. Whereas you come to a country like Poland, it's rich in its own history, you know, and there's its own culture. So I'm curious as to how that shines through the bar or through the food, or like you say, your mm-hmm. your partner doing fine dining, but using traditional Polish techniques and then modernizing that. Like, I love that that's what he does and that's what that restaurant does, because in Australia, we lost that, right? Like, colonization and that terrible part of the history lost a lot of the indigenous culture and heritage that was rich to Australia, and then the UK came over and fucked it all up basically, and then we lost all that, you know, whereas if there was an integration and a celebration of their culture, we might see a bit more of their techniques and their food coming back into the food. Do you know what I mean? So I'm curious as to how maybe that would be in a bar. Like, mm-hmm. do you guys also use maybe some Polish techniques here that you've grown up with from your parents that you've integrated in a cocktail or two, or ingredients that are unique to here that we might not?
For example, the vodka would be a good example.
Sure.
That is our national spirit. And it's not very long history of its good, marketing.
Yeah.
Like, we're starting to try to sell it and show how good quality can it be. And for example, this vodka bar I worked in, we had a tasting menu of vodkas. We tried to teach people that it can be made of potatoes, wheat, rye, oats, even corn. And this market is very, very developing right now, and sell a lot of different okovitas and distillates that are not rectified. Of course, vodka is a thing, and premium vodka. For example, there is an interesting fact of a guy who started some vodka brand in Poland,
uh-huh.
but he started to sell it abroad because Polish market wasn't ready for premium vodka, for this expensive vodka. So it was Polish vodka sold outside the Poland.
Yeah.
And then he started to sell it in Poland when our market was ready for this premium products. So yes, this is one example of our national goods that try to promote and see the value of that.
Yeah.
That's one example. And I don't know what else.
Yeah, no, I'm just curious. I'm curious more or less about maybe a technique that or a traditional Polish technique or approach to food that you might find used in a bar. Like, you may not even be aware of it because you grew up with it and it's normal here, mm-hmm. but it's foreign to me. So, like, for me, it would be using like a lot of native ingredients that are only grown in Australia, or something that my dad, for example, like me and my dad were talking about this the other day, but he's Maltese, like his background's from Malta. So pastizzis are quite a common thing from Malta. So, like, and I was thinking about how I could integrate that into a restaurant that I would like, you know, so make it fine dining like your partner's doing with the Polish food. Like do you have any drinks, or have you made a drink that uses maybe a traditional Polish technique or ingredient that comes to mind? Because I'd love to learn.
Yeah, there is very, very classic one. It's tatanka. So the cocktail that is basically the bison grass, the third bottle on the left. Bison grass vodka with apple juice. It's very popular.
Yeah.
One of the most popular cocktails, I would say. Of course, except the Monster Martini.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. But I was thinking about the fact that in Poland there are different regions who have different traditions.
Yeah.
Of course, with food, etc. That's absolutely normal. But when we speak about the palate, for example, what cocktails people like? Them more sweet or like Italians like bitter, etc. So in Asia, people prefer sweeter cocktail than probably in Europe. And in Poland, it's the same thing. That probably it depends on the region and city. If people prefer more sweet drinks, So I'm not sure if this is true. But sometimes when you travel to a different city and visit some bars, and you feel like all the cocktails are too sweet, and this is something that I heard a lot about, that people in Poland like have a sweet palate and they prefer sweet things, and the best sells vodkas, flavored vodkas, are the sweet one in the shops, I mean.
Yeah.
So for Polish market, we need to make it sweeter, etc.
Yeah.
But that's not exactly my experience from a bar. But of course, I live in some little bubble in a cocktail bar, and people who come here have a specific palate for sure.
Yeah.
So it depends where you are,
what
experience you get, impression. Because, sometimes if you work in a cocktail bar like this, you could think that people love to drink sours
or
bitter, smoky cocktails. And it's not entirely true.
I'm an example of that.
You're a good example. And a lot of people from different countries come here, of course. So you can see what people likes. But when I work in Gdańsk, by the seaside in Poland, and there was a lot of tourists from Norway.
Yeah.
And my experience is that they all love sweet things like, I don't know, Baileys, Irish coffee, Fireball. Yes, this cinnamon liquor. And they drink only sweet liquors.
Yeah.
So Polish people doesn't look like sweet people who love sweets when you compare it to them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It depends.
Yeah. I'm curious. What made you think of? Is it Tatanka?
Tatanka. Yes.
What made you think of that cocktail when you were thinking about Polish drinks? Why? What's important about the apple juice
It's just iconic.
For Poland, is that just quite a common thing?
Yes. I don't know if you know Żubrówka Bison Grass, but maybe it's not popular in Australia, but in a lot of countries in Europe, there is. And there, it is seen as very premium product.
Okay.
It's different bottle for the different markets.
Yeah.
So in Poland, it's like 30 zloty for a bottle, and it's very cheap vodka, and no one see this like a premium thing.
Yeah.
And in the different countries, they sell it for a lot of money, and people see this like this is the premium one. So, maybe because of the price, people don't see the value of this product.
Yeah.
This is a thing, but it's one of the most iconic, I would say. And it's only two ingredients cocktail, so everyone can prepare it.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
It works very well, the apple juice with the bison grass.
Right. Does the bison grass have a particular flavor?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, that works with the apple. That's interesting.
Yeah, I can show you the bison grass. It's over there. So it's very aromatic. And this is just basically the vodka infused with this grass.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. That's awesome, huh?
It's like everyone know it.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people love it.
Yeah, no, that's I can see why that would work well with apple. Yes. That's really nice. I love that smell. Yeah, that's beautiful. So this is bison grass.
Yes.
Oh right, that's great. And that so is that vodka called bison grass? Is that yes. what that? Oh, so that they take vodka and literally infuse that mm-hmm. way. Oh,
yeah, right. And in the bottle you have a single grass inside.
Oh really?
Yes.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And people are putting this inside.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. That's really really cool. Beautiful. Yeah, that's really really awesome. Like this is the trouble when it comes to Australia is that there's like I say, because it's so multicultural, there's no one common drink that is iconic to to Australia through culture and heritage and all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of interesting to learn that, you know, like there are a lot of awesome spirits that are coming out of Australia now, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Awesome spirits, like they're beautiful and they're doing an awesome job. But to have that history of this iconic drink that you might have or food, you know, like coming over here and seeing how popular beetroot soup is or something like that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like that's the something that we like unfortunately don't have. So it's really cool to learn that.
And you can play with this ingredient. In our menu, we also made a cocktail which was with reduced apple juice. So it was like a syrup, but it is so tasty. It's not like the one from the bottle. It's like the real apple juice that we pressed. It was the specific kind of apples that we also use, and then it was so delicious. And we compare it, and we mix it with some bison grass. And it was very unique, but the ingredients, these two ingredients are very popular, but you can do this in absolutely different way and create something that is proper drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on something that is so simple.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. I just did like being creative like that is... Yeah, being creative like that is really, really fun. And it's like, it's making me think of like the food that I create now myself because of what I know and the knowledge and the learning and making the dishes that I do now as opposed to when I first started. Like when I was an apprentice chef, I was so passionate about what I was doing is that I would go to work when they were closed mm-hmm. and then buy an ingredient that I didn't really know how to use, and I would try different things with it, and I would make, I'll show you a photo. And just to learn. And I would take a beetroot and my boss did the same thing. My head chef who I would watch did me in the kitchen and I would wash the pots. And then he was the guy that got me into cooking. He would try and get me to be passionate. I guess like your boss here, where he would just go, you know, think about this in this way, or, you know, think outside the box or be creative. And so I was like, yeah, cool. So I would come in when they were closed and I would buy a beetroot or a celery and then just learn how to use a celery in all these different ways, whether it be an oil, you juice, you make a gel, all these sort of strange things, you pickle it. Like I was an apprentice, so all these mm-hmm. basic things were new to me. And I would make a dish that was terrible. It would be terrible because I look at it now and go, what the fuck was I doing? But now I can learn.
No, that's really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I don't know, like when you reflect back on your own career from when you started in cocktail bars, making your own original cocktail to now, do you have any moments or memories that you remember from the first cocktail you made? Do you look back and go, oh, I can't. What mm-hmm. what was I doing compared to now? Like, do you have anything like that?
Yeah, of course. What was I doing comparing to now? Sure, but what you said, it brings to my mind the memory of me trying to learn classic cocktails. And I decided to make one classic cocktail that I don't know on a day. And I found the recipes, but it was at work when I wasn't busy. And I prepared these cocktails to learn it better, because just reading the recipe, it's not so easy to remember that.
Yeah.
When you make it, then you can remember this better. Mm. And especially if you try, how does it taste. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was doing one a day, and I always was giving this cocktail at the kitchen, so the chef was happy that they can try. And that was the way that I learned, for example. But what I was doing as the very beginning, I think that I remember my first cocktail that I prepared, and it was mojito.
Oh yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah.
It was on a menu in this venue when I worked, and someone ordered this, and I had no idea how to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I need to say that it was some kind of not very accessible knowledge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To prepare cocktails it was for bartenders. And I was new, and I was a girl, so guys didn't want to show me how to do this, because they wanted to have the power of making drinks, something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know if you know what I'm saying.
Guys are assholes.
But of course, at some point, I find out, and they show me how to make cocktails. Like, you need to give vodka, syrup, lemon juice and juice. And this is it.
Yeah,
you have cocktails and some crushed ice and hurricane glass.
Yeah.
And that was how, and it was usually blue.
Yeah.
And this was the cocktails that I started to make. But actually mojito was the first one.
Yeah.
It was very popular back then. And it still is. But
yeah. Do you have, when you make a menu now, when you have to come up with your own original cocktail, is like, what kind of direction do you like to go when it comes to making your own unique cocktail? Because these ones are unique, they're very different. You can't really have this cocktail when you go anywhere else. You know, they're very specific to this venue, and that makes it unique. I'm just curious about for you, when you make your own cocktail, like, what are you thinking when it comes to making something that's original to you, perhaps?
Mm-hmm.
For me, it would be being vegan, doing making a vegan dish, but incorporating foraged ingredients. And that's unique to me specifically, as opposed to the next chef next to me. Do you know what I mean? Like, what would be an example for you if you've got a cocktail like that?
For me, the most important part is the concept and the story behind.
Mm-hmm.
I like when my cocktails tell a story. So I prefer, because some people are just, the flavors comes to their mind and they create the cocktails with no background, and they need to think about the story behind it, and it's very difficult. And on the other direction, it's easier, and I prefer this way, to think about the concept, what I want to tell, what story. Because the stories give you the ingredients in some way. You want to make cocktail that is, well, let's say our cocktail, The Little Prince, it was inspired by the book. So we made the twist on paper plane cocktail. Paper plane is a cocktail that we serve with a paper plane. And the little prince was flying a plane. And then you think about it, and he had a rose, but the rose flavors is very similar to geranium, and then we use the geranium, and this all ingredients are connected in some stories. Then it is very satisfying for me to make cocktail like that.
Yeah,
because it's the whole concept, not only the drink.
Yeah,
but of course I love to shake my Negroni with lemon juice. And it's delicious.
Yeah.
And there is no concept behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just delicious.
Do you have a cocktail at the moment that is a story from maybe your childhood, or maybe from your experience bartending?
Well, there was one cocktail that I created for a cocktail competition, and the theme was to present yourself by the cocktail. So it was very nice. I created an old fashioned with no garnish, like very minimalistic cocktail, because that's what I think, the less is more. And I presented this side of myself, and there was I remember the tincture made of amber and the ash, because the amber was presenting the seaside when I used to work, and the ash was from the south, where my hometown and my experience from there. And then I used the vodka to make this tincture that was represent the Warsaw when I work in this vodka bar. So it was all connected in a concept, and the cocktail was tasty, of course. So this is the cocktail that I created and had a background story connected with my experience, with my life then. Yeah. But from childhood, you know, it's always funny thing, because on cocktail competition, there is a very popular subject to use your grandmother and your childhood and the jam that your grandmother made. So we always make fun of that.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I can see why that's the... I'm imagining on Netflix, the chef's table.
Yeah.
You know, where Massimo Bottura is talking about his grandmother's tortellinis, you know? It's like, I remember sitting under the table in the restaurant and, you know, my mother would be making her tortellinis, you know? And I'm like, oh, that's so good.
Oh my God, our childhood memories are so important for us. Yeah. They are essential, but when you present it on a cocktail competition, it's a little bit like no one's care. It's very important for you, but not exactly perfect subject. for presentation, because of the fact that a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
So if you want to be different, you better don't do this. Sometimes you can use this, of course. And good memories are very inspiring for creating flavors. Of course.
I want to touch on this amber and the ash, because I think this would be a good way to reflect on your experience, you know, and mm-hmm. to touch on that. So if we talk about the amber being by the seaside,
mm-hmm.
tell me a bit about what it was like working there and how that influenced you as a bartender. Like whereabouts was that when you talk about the amber and being by the seaside? Whereabouts was that and where were you working? Is that a vodka place?
No, that was this concept with food pairing. It was a fine dining restaurant with cocktails menu.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, I moved there especially for this job.
And
when I finished working there, I moved here.
Yeah.
It was like I didn't travel there to be in this city, just to be in this specific workplace.
Why is that?
When I think about it now, it seems a little strange, but I just heard about this cocktail bar. Someone told me, and that they are looking for bartenders. So I sent my resume, but wasn't sure if they would even consider me as a, you know. Then I was thinking about this place, like this is a higher level than mine. So this is the way that I could learn, but I didn't think that they would consider me. So I just sent my resume and they invited me for an interview. So I come to Gdańsk. It was few hours of a travel, of course. And we talked and they invited me for a first shift. So I needed to learn this whole manual full of classic cocktails and everything. And of course I did, because I'm, you know, hard learner. And they told me, okay, you can start.
Yeah.
And I left everything behind I started to work there. It was one of the jobs that learned me really a lot.
Yeah.
There was very, 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 for example, we had an exam each month. Exams from classic cocktails, from our menu. The bartenders needed to know all ingredients in the dishes, because we was always also serving tasting menu at the bar. So we needed to know to explain what's on your plate. So it was very, you know, developing experience.
That's awesome. I like that. I think being tested on your ability to and knowledge for the what you're serving, I think is very important. Because you'd hate to go to a restaurant and someone, especially a fine dining restaurant, and the waiter puts down the food and doesn't really understand what they're putting.
Yeah, that's not an option.
Exactly. Like, because especially when a chef or you know, could be, you know, the difference between the bartender and the person who puts the cocktail on the table, like you put so much time and effort and a story into what you, you know, put in that glass or on that plate. Like if it goes from here to that person's table and that person doesn't know what they're doing, that gets lost. And that's a shame, you know, like, it's just like, what the fuck? What was the point? You know, like I'll go to a pub and pour beers because that seems like it's easier to do than you put in so much passion and effort. So, you know, it's crazy. That's where so everyone's just as important as the next person in a restaurant, you know, or a bar. And I think that's important.
This was also the reason when we had the cross shifts. Like, for example, if you were a bartender, you needed to make a shift at the kitchen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and on the floor and
etc. Oh, that's awesome.
So you needed to get some experience from the other sections.
That's good.
So you know how their work looks like, and you can understand their needs. You know, but because in restaurants like that, when you have waiters, bartenders, chefs, etc., managers, there are so many reasons to conflict.
Yeah.
And misunderstandings, etc. Everyone has a different, you know, goals.
Yeah.
So that's important. I seriously love working here when there's only five of us.
And
we all make shifts, like a host, like a waiter, like a bartender. I love it that we all do the same job.
Yeah, I like that.
And there is no difference in our goals.
Yeah. No, I really
in
like
bigger
that.
Venues there is a little different situation.
You
need to deal with different problems.
Yeah. No, I like that. I like an intimate small venue with a good tight team. I think it's so much better than a big place that just got too many covers. You're like, oh fuck this.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. That's awesome. I guess to finish up, I'm sure you'd be expecting this one right now, but I like to ask one question as a good way to reflect on your career and experience in a humorous way or a funny way. And it's something that chefs talk about. We talked about this before, but it's about being in the shit. So chefs, I can tell you countless times of myself being in the shit in the kitchen, just for whatever reason, you know, someone's miscounted something and you don't have enough for what's on order and you have to make it happen, or you drop your mise en place and you're like, fuck, now you gotta pull all the ingredients together, or a dietary comes in and it's so complicated but you have to do it and you just like have to do 50 things at once. I just wanted to ask your time or two where you were in the shit, and if you can recount that from your own experience being a bartender at different places, if you will. If you have one or two or three, please knock yourself out. I think that's a good way to reflect.
One is gonna be from my first job, because it just came to my mind when it was one of my first days, I remember, and I needed to deliver this, I think maybe 7 cocktails. They were in a hurricane glass, very high glasses. And the people were sitting in elegant clothes, very, very close to each other, and I had no opportunity to serve this. I was standing like this, and they just wanted to start to sing because that's someone's birthday, and they stand up, and I, you know, drop all these cocktails on them, and everything was on the lovely dresses and suits, and there is me, one of my first day at this work, and I just take a look at my boss. What's going on? The people are, of course, not satisfied with the situation, and I'm like, oh my god, he's going to fire me, right? No, then, and I after the situation when we clean everything up, etc. And I approached my boss and was like, so what's going on now? And he's like, what are you talking about? he pretended that nothing happened. And I was, wow, so I still have a job. Great. Wow. But yeah, I think it's not nice experience when you are in a bar and very nice in a very nice clothes and then the whole cocktail is on you. But I don't have I don't remember that they were very angry. I don't know why, because probably I would be.
Yeah. I was curious. I'm like, how do they react?
Where but maybe that? My memories, you know, just changed during the time. And the other one is the day, the worst day of my entire career.
Yeah.
In this vodka bar. Normally, their work it works like restaurant. So, I served everything at the bar to the waiters, and I didn't even have a guest at the bar. It was just a restaurant. And sometimes I came to the tables and tell a story about vodkas or something like that, make some, tasting. Mm-hmm. But normally the service was like that. And there was one day, I don't know what happened, something was going on, museum night or something like this. And there was like 100 of people at the bar who wanted their drinks.
Yeah.
And there was me and my colleague. And of course, we were trying to do everything, but we was run out of glass, of cold Prosecco, even Prosecco, everything, beers. We had nothing.
We
have 100 people. And I was so angry. Oh my God, it was so stressful. People were yelling at us.
Yeah.
And we couldn't do anything. It was like, why they are all inside? Seriously. And I remember after that shift, that was about, I don't know, 15 hours or something this. And with this level of stress the whole time.
Wow.
I was walking home. There was raining and I was crying.
Oh, God.
Then after the next day, I went to my general manager and I said that I quit.
Oh, really?
And I cried. And he was like, it's not your fault. You did everything that you could. Sorry. And then I didn't quit. It was my idea that, no, I failed.
Yeah.
How couldn't I?
God.
But, oh my God, this is the worst day of my entire career. I will always remember that. And my walk home in rain with tears.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about it. Yeah.
But now it's funny for me.
Yeah, it's funny when you look back at it.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hospitality. Everything's funnier the more you look back at your career and you're like, God, so many stressful times, but you just look back and laugh now and go, oh, I'm still here.
Yeah, but... you know, there was some people who were yelling at us, of course, and they was impatient, etc. But there was also people who understand the situation. But when I think about this, I would never stand in that queue. That's impossible.
Yeah.
I don't like this. And why people do this, I don't know. And this is why I don't work in a club or anything like this. I prefer just sitting at the bar and be relaxed.
Yeah, cheers to that. Awesome. Well, I'm keen to finish at that.
The Roots Hospitality Podcast is proudly supported by Sydney Direct Fresh Produce, the fruit and veg providor that are led by Luke Kohler, who has provided Sydney with some of the best produce for more than two decades and still smashing it out today. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please follow or leave a review at wherever you listen to your podcast. You can also check out the new website over at rootshospitality.com.au. Be sure to subscribe to hear about the latest guest, new behind-the-lens photos, and much more. Cheers!